Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest episode, the latest chapter, the latest great chronicle of Life on Planet Pork. You're with myself, of course, the Porkmeister, and the rock chick orator extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. And Ms. Jones, as I speak to you, I'm not joking, there are snowflakes piling up on my Velux windows above me, and I cannot believe it. It's nearly the middle of April. The latest I ever remember snow happening was at the Cheltenham Festival, which is usually the middle of March, March the 15th or something like that. And I remember it snowing heavily there and thought that was late in the year. But I simply can't believe what I'm seeing here. It's unbelievable. It's the last four mornings, my bird baths in the garden have been frozen solid, not just a bit of ice on the top, but frozen solid. Extraordinary climate.
Ah, well, you have a very short memory then, Michael, because this is a classic April dump, as it's known. We very often get this kind of weather during April, and it's known as the April dump because if you happen to be in the Alps for your Easter holidays, as we often used to be when the kids were little and we'd go skiing, you know, you could always guarantee a massive snowfall. You could pretty much guarantee it. And you'd also have nice blue skies and fine weather as well. So you have that great combination. There's nothing worse than going skiing when it's a whiteout. It's really cold and miserable. It's the skies are grey. You can't see anything. So it's much more pleasant to be skiing during the April dump.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. A few of my pals go, and they don't go skiing anyway. They go and sit on the terrace. They love the beautiful blue skies and the contrast with the sunlight and the snow. And quite ideal. The only other miserable thing with skiing, and I haven't been for years, is if the temperature goes the other way and you're skiing on water. That really is miserable.
Yeah, late in the season, it's a bit like water skiing, isn't it, really? Yeah, and it's quite dangerous as well when it gets slushy like that. You have to go very high up the mountain to find any skiable snow. And, of course, that brings all kinds of other problems. So you've got to be a very good off-piste skier, as my eldest daughter is, who once led a team of 10 people to rescue over the mountains, sort of crossed over the back of the mountain when they got lost and they were skiing off-piste. Yeah, she's very good. But my skiing days ended years ago. I think I'm just too nervous about breaking anything now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I totally agree. My mate, Mr. Brazil, Alan Brazil, the footballer, two of his daughters skied internationally, one for Scotland and one for Great Britain. Al used to drive thousands of miles across Europe with, you know, the skis on the roof of his Range Rover, taking them to all sorts of competitions. And that's where he, you know, loved the sort of skiing atmosphere. But, of course, Al really liked the après ski. And I have to say, he always had very good taste in that sort of area. Now, of course, Ms. Jones, you and I have not spoken since, tragically, the death of the Duke of Edinburgh was announced. That happened just after we made our last recording. And it's been 3 or 4 days of it ever since. And seems to be still going on now as well. And you and I are Fleet Street veterans. We know that once, you know, the national newspapers get their teeth into a story, the big decision then is when to let go, you know, and when to stop in case your rivals are still going with it. I do think there's been terrific amount of coverage which has kind of repeated itself over the last few days.
Well, it really has. And with no disrespect to the Duke of Edinburgh or to Her Majesty the Queen, I think the coverage has been ridiculously too much. The BBC has even set up a special complaints page after having been inundated with criticism over its coverage of Prince Philip's death. They pulled their entire BBC One and BBC Two scheduled lineup on the Friday the 9th. They suspended all programming on BBC Four, and they also halted all upbeat music on the corporation's radio services.
Yes,
people are saying it's the end of an era and we have to mark that, but do we need it round the clock every single day? And of course, we've got the best part of another week of this now until the funeral next Saturday, which is then going to be broadcast live. Which I don't really understand, other than the point the royal family have been making, which is please don't come to Windsor to leave your floral wreaths. Please stay at home, watch television with your family. And this could be an incentive to people who are not going to see anything otherwise. Stay at home, watch the funeral on telly, you know, make a donation to your favourite charity or to the Duke of Edinburgh Award or something, and don't come anywhere near Windsor. There's not much point. You're not going to see anything. No. But yes, I think it is too much. And it's kind of time to move on now, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, all broadcasters now wearing a black tie. I can accept that. I mean, look, I do accept that he was a major figure in this country. He's been with me every single day of my life and every single day of yours, you know, because he was the consort, the husband to the Queen, and he was the Duke of Edinburgh. And I think he did a lot of good work, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I totally agree with you. It's, you know, 24 hours a day, it grinds on, and another 24 hours, all the front pages of the papers are looking the same. And as you said, and I must endorse it, with no disrespect to Her Majesty the Queen, do you think now that the Queen should step down and just hand over everything now to the younger generation? Charles is not that young, he's in his 70s, but William's got to be groomed to be king after that. I personally, although I understand about duty and service and born into the role and you never abdicate, I do think there's a case to say the Queen now deserves a break.
No, I don't think so. I think, I mean, she has said herself that she never will abdicate. She's in the role for life. That's the solemn promise that she made. Yeah. I think also there is the fear, because Charles divides opinion. If not for Camilla, Diana would probably still be alive. We don't want Camilla as queen. So the longer we can hold off on that, I think the better for the royal family, for the monarchy itself, because it's on shaky ground as it is. Yeah. Prince Philip's death does leave the Queen as the lone royal that the public identifies with. And I think had Diana lived, that would not have been the case. But they are an outmoded institution. The rest of Europe's monarchies have mostly fallen. Spain's made a comeback, didn't it? But it's time for change. And I think once Her Majesty leaves us, that really they are in a very precarious position, and they know that. Yeah. I think, you know, they're not long for this world.
Well, you say that, but I think that they've built themselves into an institution, not just of a monarchy, but of part of the British way of life. They're a huge tourist attraction.
They're not, though, are they? No,
they are.
Not.
Oh, no, I think they are.
The royal buildings, such as Buckingham Palace, Windsor Castle, the Tower of London, to some extent, all of those places are still visited. It's just like Versailles in France, which is one of the most visited places in France.
Yes.
They don't have a monarchy, they haven't had for years, but the people still visit the royal residences and palaces and so on.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's not the royals themselves, because we never see the Queen out on the streets other than for a royal wedding or something. We haven't seen the Duke of Edinburgh for years. In fact, I've been joking with my mum for a long time that he died about 20 years ago and that we just don't know.
Yeah.
We don't see much of them. They're not very active publicly, COVID aside. So, you know, I don't think they are a tourist attraction. I think the idea of them is a tourist attraction, but they don't come out and shake hands with the general public as a rule.
Well, no, I think you've made some very good points there, and you're absolutely right. But the glamour is still there, you know, and you're absolutely right. Kate is nothing like the attraction, with the due respect to her, that Diana was. and Diana's not here now. So, yeah, you make some very valid points. Have you ever covered royal stories? I mean, obviously, you're the Rochick writer extraordinaire, but quite often it crosses over. You know, Charles has gone to concerts in the past and he was involved with the Three Degrees and all that. So did you ever cross over into any pub and royal coverage?
My closest encounter was at Live Aid in 1985,
right,
which Charles and Diana obviously attended. But other than that, no. No, although my ex-husband once crashed his car into Diana's Jag at Old Street Roundabout. And this was just before we got married, actually. And he had to go into hiding for a couple of months down in Somerset. And he had to conceal his car in a barn full of straw bales. What? And the police basically told him to beat a hasty retreat and to go off radar for a couple of months until the fuss all died down, because there would have been an inquiry otherwise, and he could have been held. You know, perhaps he was a terrorist and could have driven into her Jag deliberately, who knows? But he didn't do that because he wasn't a terrorist.
No.
But he was told he was made to disappear for a while.
Well, where did this happen again, did you say? Which roundabout?
Old Street Roundabout.
Old Street, God, that's a pretty tatty part of town, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of media city now, but it
begs all the questions. What was she doing over there?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's interesting. My, I did the Charles and Diana wedding. I was a reporter at the Daily Express in Manchester, okay? But they needed so many people on the ground down in London. I was drafted down with a couple of other reporters from Manchester. And believe it or not, I was given a beat on Fleet Street, even though that's where Daily Express building in London is. And I did a great story about a bloke who made £1,000 that day by designing and inventing cardboard periscopes for people at the back of the crowd. Okay.
Oh, that's very clever.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I saw all these and I thought, I wonder where they came from. And I tracked them down, and this bloke had come from somewhere like Rochester. And he'd had this idea to make these cardboard periscopes with a mirror at the bottom, mirror at the top. He made them for about 50p, and he was selling them for £5 a time or £3 a time or something like that. You know, made himself £1,000 in the day. And that was the one story my contribution made, because there were probably 100 reporters, you know what I mean, covering the story. Jean Rook had a sign on her office door, "Nobody to enter except editor by order of Jean Rook," while she was writing her colour piece, you know. And all that sort of thing. But the only other time, oh yeah, that's right. So I go back to Manchester for where I worked for about another 6 months, and then they did their first nationwide tour in North Wales, right? Because of course she'd become the Princess of Wales, and he was the Prince of Wales. And I saw the moment when Charles suddenly realised what he'd done. Because they were walking in the street in somewhere like Rhyl or Prestatyn, somewhere like that in your principality. And all of a sudden, Charles was completely ignored by people screaming as though the Beatles had just arrived and rushing towards Diana to try and hug her and give her flowers. And like her. And Charles was visibly shaken that he was more or less ignored by the crowds in favour of his young bride.
Yeah, I completely get that. I think that was happening before they got married as well.
Maybe.
He realised, and I think, you know, they couldn't go back on it, could they? I think neither of them actually wanted to marry each other.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Diana had discovered that he was still immersed in his love affair with Camilla.
Yeah.
He was never going to give her up. He even said to her at one point, and this came out in the Andrew Morton book, which, of course, as we now know, she collaborated with him on, that he had said to her, "Every Prince of Wales throughout history has had a mistress, and I'm not going to be any different. So basically put up with it."
Yes.
And she was desperately unhappy. And I think the Queen had said, you know, give it time, that he will come round, he will change. But he damn well wasn't going to. He was going to have his cake and eat it.
No, I totally
agree. And of course, that wound up in a total tragedy, didn't it?
A total and awful tragedy, I agree. The only other time I got involved was when I took a yacht, chartered a yacht in the Caribbean to follow Diana around the Caribbean. I mean, I thought then, you know, what a life this girl's having. She's just trying to get away on a bit of holiday in the Caribbean on a yacht. It was just before she became pregnant the first time. And I think that picture of her taken in a bikini when it was noticed her stomach was bulging was taken on that trip. somewhere in the Caribbean. But
so you decided to contribute to her misery by following her around on a yacht?
Well, yes and no. I didn't know that it would upset her and all that kind of stuff. But
well,
you know,
obviously you did. Because
I suppose I did. Yeah.
She went on a getaway holiday. Yeah. And she's got half a bloody Fleet Street following her around.
Yeah, she did have. Yeah, yeah, all of them, including the big red tomato, Jimmy Whittaker, who was the Mirror's,
yes.
You know, remember Jimmy?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Yeah, the Mirror Royal Correspondent. Ken Lennox, who was the Mirror photographer. And, of course, Arthur from The Sun. I've forgotten Arthur's surname. I'm going mad. I've known him for years.
I have as well. Yeah. I saw him not long ago.
Yeah.
He was doing the pictures for Jerry Hall and Rupert Murdoch's blessing at St. Bride's.
Oh, okay.
They'd had a civil marriage because... both of them had partners who were still alive, so they couldn't marry in church.
Yeah.
So they had a blessing in our church.
Yeah. Do you know what? His surname's gone straight out of my head. And
Arthur. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll come back in a minute.
Having a senior moment here.
Exactly. But I worked with Arthur for about 30 years, I suppose, altogether. Lovely fella and so laid back and so with it, you know. But anyway, there we are. So that's the Royals for us. Now, of course, the other momentous thing is the world's opening up and... I should have been doing a round of pubs today, and it was all going to be, you know, lifting a pint, you know, raise a glass to the reopening, although it's only the gardens and all that kind of stuff. But again, in terms of the coverage, a lot of the broadcasting organisations decided not to do it in deference to the fact that although it's now 4 days since, sadly, the Duke of Edinburgh passed away, we are in a state of national mourning. The Queen is still in mourning, and it would have been, would have seemed callous and unkind. I don't know what you think about that, but frankly, I think the Duke of Edinburgh was the sort of bloke who might have said, oh, no, just get on with it, you know, or something like that.
Well, he did say, didn't he, that he wanted the minimum of fuss funeral.
Yeah.
He liked a tipple, we all know that. So I think he would have rather liked the idea of people gathering in the gardens of pubs today and paying tribute to him over a pint.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. As it is, it would have been a disaster because of the snow I've just been talking to you about. You know, certainly in my part of the world, I was going to do it on Epsom Downs, a beautiful pub called The Rubbing House. On Epsom Downs, huge garden on the edge of the course, you know, beautiful place to be when the Epsom Derby's happening and all that kind of stuff. Talking about horse races, of course, Ms. Jones, let's reflect on a lady who's taken the world of sport and in particular the world of racehorse of racing by storm. Rachel Blackmore galloped home, excuse me, on the horse that I backed in the Grand National and won the National at Aintree. I mean, what a girl.
It was pretty good, wasn't it? It's always made sense to me that women should ride horses because they are typically smaller and lighter.
Yeah.
They were only allowed to enter the National as jockeys since 1975.
Yes.
So it's long been a male-dominated event, although these days we've got lots of women trainers and owners and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There were 40 riders, incidentally, in this Grand National, only three of whom were female.
Yes.
So we're still a long way off.
Well, but what it has done is it's completely balanced up horse racing now because she's achieved the ultimate.
Well, no, it hasn't. I've just said there were 40 riders, three of whom were female. So that is a very long way from a balance.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is it will now far more be assessed on merit rather than on the sex of the person sitting on the horse. You know what I mean? It's got to be. It'll open up doors.
It's got to change.
Of
yes,
course.
It will do.
Absolutely. You say that. I've never ridden a horse. I don't know if you have. But how much of controlling a horse, which is a thoroughbred, and therefore it's the sort of animal equivalent of driving a Ferrari in the sense that every half second when you pull on a lead or something, the horse can suddenly change direction or something. How much of riding a horse is down to the strength of the person holding the reins?
Well, I think it's mental strength rather than physical strength. And obviously these people, yes, they get on horses. They're on rocking horses when they're babies, aren't they? And they live in and around stables. They've been around horses all their lives, all these women. The other two in this year's Grand National, Bryony Frost and Tabitha Worsley, they were the sort of girls who grew up in stables.
Yes,
you know?
Indeed. Yeah.
So they have a great affinity with horses and they meet the horses head on because a lot of that control is about psychological control. Yep. And the horse and the rider become almost one being.
Right. Yes, I see what you mean. Yes. Like,
so sort of it's less about physical strength and about being able to rein a horse back and to push it on and so on. Because, yes, they are very powerful animals, but they have tiny brains. And so the human will always have the upper hand.
Yeah, well, I'll take your word for it. I used to love the Grand National, by the way. I've done every Epsom Derby for about the last 30 years and Cheltenham for the same amount of time, but we didn't always get up to Aintree because, of course, it's Liverpool and the race was often later in the day, so it didn't come into our sort of broadcasting span, if you see what I mean. But I loved it, honestly.
Do you remember in the song, "Thank you very much for the Aintree Iron"?
Yeah.
What was the Aintree Iron?
I don't know. And I should know, shouldn't I? Because we talked about the scaffold on this show before. Thank you very much for the Aintree Iron. I think it sounds like a place to me, but I'm not sure. It might be.
I'm sure I knew that in the past.
I did.
I'll go away and look it up. You know what will happen? We'll be inundated with people informing us what the Aintree Iron is.
It always happens
when we pose a question.
It would be. There's something like a local monument or something like that, I would think. But anyway... From there, can I just say to you, today, as we are broadcasting, is the anniversary of the birth of Bobby Moore, who was born on this day in 1941. Truly one of the great, great sportsmen of our lifetimes and our generation, and maybe somebody known to your dad.
Very much known to my father. They were friends for years.
Yes.
And my mum and dad were at the 66 World Cup final, and they both held the trophy as it was passed around.
But
Bobby was a very low-key guy, and he and my father stayed close until Bobby's death.
Yeah, his death was tragic. He didn't tell anybody until 10 days before he died that he had cancer that had started in his liver and spread to his lymph nodes, gone all over his body. He was still playing golf 10 days before he died. He made the announcement, said, "I want to tell the world," and he died 10 days later. I mean, to end a life like that, a life so spectacular, the only man ever to have lifted, the Englishman ever to have lifted the World Cup, the Jules Rimet trophy, and for all he did, and, 106 caps for England, to have been so humble as to not think the world wanted to know about the state of your health for all that time. What a remarkable guy.
Indeed, but also he was very lucky that he was able to still be active and to not have wasted away over, some people lie in a bed for a couple of years dying, basically, don't they, from various illnesses and cancers and so on. So, he did it his way. You have to admire that.
Yeah, no, I totally do. And, another member of the 66 World Cup team. What do you think about the riots in Ulster, Miss Jones? I don't like to get heavy and, we have a heavy subject on the Royals so far and all that. But it breaks my heart to see what's going on there, because I worked there for probably up to a year, in blocks of 3 months here, 3 months there, and that kind of stuff. And, came to be very involved in the politics of the place. There's no solution to what's going on in Northern Ireland, even now. But it's hideous to see, youngsters as young as 12, 13, 14 going out each night with petrol bombs and attacking the police.
I think this was coming for about the last year or so, wasn't it?
We could all
see this brewing, these simmering loyalist tensions over the Irish Sea border imposed as a result of the UK-EU Brexit deal. And the new trading border is the result of the Northern Ireland Protocol, which was introduced to avoid the need for a hard border on the island. But that doesn't seem to have placated anybody, does it? I think it's one of those situations where this is an excuse for uprising and for
totally
reaction.
Yeah.
People have been locked down all this time, and I don't think it's as simple as let's all protest about the trading border.
Yeah.
I think it's much more than that. And it's a lot to do with COVID. It's a lot to do with frustration and restrictions and the hell of a year that we've all had. But this isn't helping. I can understand why they're doing it, but it's not going to help anybody.
Oh, it won't help anybody. Honestly, there's no black or white in Ulster. There's a thousand shades of grey in between. And each side can take offence about something at just a whim, you know what I mean? And the thing is now, the loyalists think now they're being sold out, as a result of the Northern Ireland Accord and, the relationship with Europe and all that. It drives me mad. Anyway, we must move on.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. It's myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones, rock chick writer extraordinaire. I've got something in my throat this morning, Ms. Jones. I know what it is.
But, do you want to share that with us?
No. Excuse me, Ms. Jones, you know. but, of course...
Family show, come on.
Yeah, it's not the old pollen count, because it can't be, because there's snow all over the place. But anyway, there we are. Now, Ms. Jones, there is another aspect to life at the moment. Talked about the pubs reopening, but the shops are reopening. Are you going out on a huge shopping spree? Are you going to buy yourself something that you've denied yourself for the last 12 months when the shops have been closed? And I've seen a report which says that there's going to be a huge boom and that luxury goods are going to have a fantastic surge. What about this one? Rolls-Royce Motor Cars has reported record-breaking sales for the first 3 months of 2021 in a sign that the luxury goods market is rebounding rapidly from the pandemic. I mean, I don't know where all the money's coming from because the world's been locked down, but it looks like we're all going to start spending. Does that include you?
Well, no. You wouldn't catch me within 100 miles of a shop today. Can you imagine how berserk everybody is going to be going? And yep. The idea of those crowds, and it'll be like, you know, the January sales used to be in the old days with people queuing outside shops at 6 o'clock in the morning trying to get the place in the queue and so on. And no, I just can't stand the idea of it. I think a lot of people in this pandemic have lost absolutely everything. Their jobs, their livelihoods, their homes in many cases. And the thought of going out and spending indiscriminately seems quite vulgar to me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But I can understand people suddenly being elated that they can go into a shop again. One shop that might be worth going to is Debenhams, if you've got a local branch, because they're having a fire sale for about 3 weeks and then bang, it's all closing down. I mean, I can't believe it. I think we've had this conversation before. It's where I used to buy all my Christmas presents, because you go in there, just wander around and see things that, oh, I know, that'll do for so-and-so and that'll do for so-and-so and all that kind of stuff. But I think shopping's going to be a very different experience. Talking about the different experience, so I'm talking to my niece, okay, lovely girl, Karen, on Saturday, and explain I've got sciatica, you know, the old pain and...
sciatica. It sounds so much better in a Welsh accent, doesn't it?
Sciatica.
Sciatica.
Oh, hello, you got the
My grandmother used to say, no, my great-grandmother used to say she had sciatica. And then she'd also say she was diabetic. It wasn't diabetic. It was diabetic. Yeah. Well, I can't have tart. I'm diabetic-y. Yeah.
Well, she must have known you were going to meet me at some stage in my life. I'm both diabetic and I've got sciatica. so anyway, I'm talking to my niece. And, of course, young people are so able. She says, oh, don't worry, Uncle Mike, you know, we can solve that. And I said, what do you mean? Yeah, she said, you know, I've come across this great new drug or super herb, as it's called, and it's called curcumin. And it's a vitamin C, and it'll do you a world of good. I said, oh, where will I get that? She said, no, I'll sort it for you. Don't worry. Now, that was about 4 o'clock on Saturday, OK? At 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, just as I'd come out the shower, somebody's knocking on my door. And I thought, someone's knocking on the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. But I couldn't imagine who, because, you know, I very rarely admit people to my building, so to speak. But whoever it was had managed
That's a euphemism. I very rarely admit people to my building.
Exactly, yeah. It's
true. Officer.
Once again, Miss Jones, lowering the tone of the whole podcast, you know. And so anyway, I go to the door and I've only got a towel. And I said, hello. I said,
you answered the door in a towel. Asking for it. You answered the door in a towel.
No, this is what I said. I wasn't going to answer the door. So I wrapped a towel around me and I went to the door.
That is asking for it.
No, I looked through the spy hole, you know, and I saw a bloke standing there, you know, and I said, can I help you? And he said, yes, sir, I've got a parcel delivery for you. I said, what, for me? He said, yeah. He said, it's Amazon. I said, oh. I said, well, you know, how big is it? He said, no, it's not that. He said,
Sorry. No. He's standing there in the town, going, how big is it? Oh, no. My God.
But anyway, he said, I'm sorry, sir, but I can't leave this with you until I've got a picture of you accepting it. I said, no, I'm serious. Yeah. Oh, so, no. So I had to.
Was it April the 1st, by any chance?
No. I had to go rapidly, go and put some clothes on. You know, just a pair of shorts and a shirt. I came back to the door, opened it, handed it to him.
He appears in a chiffon blouse.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you know, I had a cigarette in a holder. You know what I mean?
Glass of champagne in the other hand. Yeah.
A glass of champagne.
And a bit of lippy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I don't know, Miss Jones, honestly, and. And he said, here we are, and I hold it. And then he said, we have to take a picture of you receiving it. That's the new rule. And I said, oh, okay, thanks very much. Anyway, I thought, I still didn't work out what it was.
This is absolute rubbish. You're winding me up here.
I am not winding you up. That's exactly the process that I went through, honestly. So I opened the...
How many times have they just put the stuff through the letterbox?
Well, I have no idea, but that's exactly the story he gave me. And I opened the little package, which was easily small enough to have gone through the letterbox, and there it was. Super Herbs Life Plan Curcumin. Vitamin C contributes to normal collagen. Manganese contributes to normal connective tissue. And it's the manganese bit which is supposed to help with the sciatica. So... thank you to my niece Karen for thinking of your uncle, and Julie received very gratefully. Thank you very much indeed.
You know what curcumin comes from, don't you? It's every time you have a curry, you're eating it because it's.
Yes, you told me that.
It's turmeric, right. Which is what gives the curry that sort of dark yellowy orange colour.
Oh, I see.
And this is a substance.
The stuff you can never get out of your clothes, by the way, when you turn it down your shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a spice. It reduces. Yeah. It's said to reduce the body's natural inflammatory response.
Yes.
And it may help relieve pain. But, and I have this on good authority, won't repair herniated discs, it won't repair sciatica, and it won't relieve spinal problems. So take it with a pinch of salt and, you know, try the sort of usual medical methods as well.
Blimey, that's a bit of a put down to my niece, isn't it? You know, who?
No, not at all. Absolutely not, because she's trying to help. But with all these sort of herbal remedies, you know, you do have to be aware that there are medical.
A lot of it's in the head. You know, a lot of it is if you believe it's helping you, it helps you. What do they call that? A gazebo, is it?
A placebo.
That's right. Yeah.
Placebo effect. Yeah.
Yeah. No, a gazebo is the thing you put up to have a beer.
That's the one you drive.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, there we go. Now, of course, you know far more about these things than I do. But what on earth is going on in the Dominic West Lily James situation? Now, just for the benefit of our millions of listeners, of course, you know all this, Miss Jones. Of course, Dominic West. Filming some production with Lily James. He's then pictured, you know, wrapped around her very warmly on a scooter for two in Rome, I think it was. Dominic West gets back. He's given a dressing down by his wife. The wife now apparently has banned him from doing any promotional work for this film or this production they've made because he's got to promise never to go near Lily James again. I mean, how's that going to work?
Well, this is great publicity for the film, isn't it? This is The Pursuit of Love. And the wife, Catherine Fitzgerald, has now allegedly said you can't do any publicity with her. Mm. So everybody wants, all they want to know is what really went on because nobody's actually told us. So I think Dominic West is a bit wet. I think she doesn't want a sleazy old married guy who wants a bit on the slide, does she? She's far too young and pretty and lovely for that.
I agree.
If she has any sense, she'll stick with her new boyfriend, Michael Schumann, who is an American rock star. He's the bassist in Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh, yeah.
Look, she's 31. She's her bio clock is probably ticking a bit now.
Yes.
And she wants to settle down with somebody single who she can have a little family with and put these sleazy married guys behind her.
Yeah. No, I kind of agree with that. I always feel embarrassed for guys who, you know, fancy themselves to the extent where they think young women fancy them. The biggest example is the chef guy. you know, who was with a young barmaid called Summer somebody.
Paul Hollywood, yes.
Paul Hollywood. I mean,
Summer Fulham Meadows, right, or whatever her name was.
Like that. And she's now made a career of literally posing, you know, in very skimpy clothes. She's got a contract with Splash, the agency you and I know so well, which originated in California, didn't it, to take pictures of showbiz stars. And you know, I'm not mocking the girl. I think everybody should use the talents that God gave them. But all she seems to do is sort of pose in, you know, bikinis and that sort of stuff. And her picture is used in tabloid newspapers, you know, maybe once a week. Good luck to her. That's fine. She's made a career out of it. But I do think Paul Hollywood looks rather stupid in you know, in hindsight for having got involved with such a young and ambitious lady at the start.
And there's another one after her, wasn't there? He picked up another young thing.
From the same pub, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit sad and sleazy, isn't it? And he had a perfectly nice wife, Alex.
She was lovely, wasn't she? Yeah, yeah.
She really was. She gave him a second chance. She wasn't going to give him a third chance.
Yeah, no.
And that is the bottom line. Everybody deserves a second chance. You shouldn't get a third because you stuffed up again. You know, come on. Waste of space. Yeah. He's just a sad old git, I think, and he got what he deserved.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. Now, the people of Wales, I thought they're animal lovers, and yet they seem to have run Wally the Walrus out of town in Tenby. There he was, just, you know, settling into his new home. They reckon, which I think is rubbish, that old Wally has floated down from the Arctic on an ice floe or an iceberg, which suddenly melted and then found himself in the Irish Sea or somewhere like that. But he made his new home Tenby, then he disappeared. But the good news is he's been sighted again. I mean, can't the people of Wales be a bit more welcoming to a walrus, Miss Jones?
Well, first of all, how do they know it's the same walrus?
Well, because there aren't any walruses in Wales. It's the only one.
Yeah, no, I get that. But it might be another one that sort of made his way down. Tenby is a lovely place. I don't know if you've ever been. We used to always go to Tenby for our summer holidays when we were little kids.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful, classic sort of seaside resort with lovely ice cream coloured buildings, lovely little harbour there, and all kinds of lovely sightseeing things in that little town.
Yes.
It's very, very expensive to buy property there now. Because I had a look, you know, I've been thinking about where I might move next.
Yes.
And it's beyond my price range, I have to say. More expensive than Cardiff, which is the map as one of the most expensive places. But I can't understand why Tenby wouldn't welcome the walrus, because it's rather a lovely thing to have in your vicinity.
They did welcome it. I'm being a bit unkind to the people of Tenby. The thing is, they welcomed it too much. People started, you know, taking rowing boats over to where Wally was and crowding round him when he was living on the slipway, taking pictures, and he pushed off. And animal experts say you shouldn't crowd round wild animals like that, because one or two things will happen. Either they'll just escape and go and find somewhere else, or they might attack you, because, you know, we've had the conversation about dogs before, and a walrus is a wild animal. Now, we talked about shopping and, you know, the prospect of new shopping and all that. Tell me, if you were going out shopping, would you buy yourself a watch? And have you got a decent watch? And the reason I ask is because it says here, time could soon be up for gendered watches after a leading retailer declared it was abandoning the sale of men's and women's pieces. Now, I've got a Rolex, which I love, you know, and it's got a blue face. I call it my Everton watch and all that kind of stuff. Whereas if I ever go and see my sisters, they've also got Rolexes. We all decided, you know, to buy ourselves one as a reward for life, so to speak. But they're only half the size of mine. Do you think that's right?
What, that it's half the size of yours?
Well, does it look right that a woman should still wear a dainty watch and a gentleman should wear a watch with a big face on his wrist?
Well, we've got smaller wrists, haven't we? I've got a Cartier watch. I only have one decent watch, but I've had it for years.
Yeah.
It's doubled in value, actually, since I bought it, which is interesting. And they increase in value by the year each time I go take it back to Cartier in Bond Street to have a new battery, whatever, have a little service, have a little polish up, and they give me the latest valuation. And it's really nice to see that it's, you know, it's got my initials engraved on the back and it's registered and all of that.
Yeah.
And I'm very fond of it. I wear it every day.
Do you?
We do have...
Oh, that's interesting, because I don't see... I wear my Rolex for special occasions or if I'm doing TV or something like that. But I don't wear it every day because you've just talked about having it, you know, brushed up and polished and all that. I'm worried that I might do something, you know, terrible and smash the face of my Rolex or something.
Yeah, but it's better worn, isn't it?
Yes,
you have these, we don't live forever. You might as well enjoy the things you have.
I agree with that.
Now.
I agree with
Mine
that.
Mine is insured on my wrist as well, which is why I wear it.
Oh, right. Good thinking.
Yeah. So, yes, I think we have smaller, daintier wrists. Some women like to wear these great big bloke's watches.
Yeah.
I like the look of my daintier Cartier, I have to say.
Yeah, I prefer a woman with an elegant, smaller watch. I have to agree. You're right about the insurance, by the way. One time I'll never wear my Rolex is if it's in the summer and, you know, I'm wearing just a shirt and chinos or something like that, and I've got a bag slung around my neck, so I don't wear a jacket because I can put everything in my bag. And my wrists are bare. I don't wear short sleeve shirts, but I always wear shirts where I roll the sleeves up, which makes me feel more comfortable. But I wouldn't get onto a train going into London or get onto a tube train or walk around London with a Rolex watch on my wrist, because I think it's an invitation for somebody to rob me.
Well, of course, but the same people who won't wear a Rolex in the street or any other kind of valuable watch will happily walk along speaking on a mobile phone.
Yeah.
And then they'll be horrified when somebody comes past on a scooter or a bike and rips the phone out of their hand.
Yeah.
So I always say to the kids, do not speak on your mobile phone on the bus, on the tube, or walking along the street. Because my son got his phone ripped out of his hand at a bus stop.
Oh dear.
And my son is 6'4". You know, he's quite a force to be reckoned with.
Yes.
They will, in numbers, they will even attack somebody like Henry.
Yeah, no, it's shocking. I don't even walk around anymore with my phone in my shirt pocket. I've always bought shirts on the basis that they've got to have a shirt pocket, you know what I mean? On the left-hand side of my breast, so to speak. And I used to put my phone in there all the time. But now I think, what an idiot. Anybody passing could just simply reach out and snatch it. And if they're much younger than me, which they probably would be, just run off and I'd have lost it. So you're absolutely right. I keep my phone out of sight and I keep my Rolex out of sight. I'll wear my Rolex if I'm wearing a suit and it can be covered by the sleeve jacket, but not otherwise. Listen, the pandemic is still with us, Ms. Jones, and you've treated it so seriously all the way through, been extra responsible. Why am I reading a piece from the health editor of the Mail on Sunday saying why washing your weekly shopping probably does nothing to protect you from COVID? Ever since day one, Leslie Ann, everything I've brought into my property, I've got a special cloth, I've got a special spray, and I wipe everything down before it gets anywhere near my cupboards or my storage or my fridge or anything. And I'm continuing to do it now, even though the risk is minimal compared to what it was at the peak.
Well, I think, it's a nice thing to do, isn't it? But it's not really helping. It makes not much difference because COVID-19 is airborne.
Yeah.
So it's falling to the ground. You're not going to pick it up off non-organic substances such as paper and cardboard and plastic.
Yeah.
Because it can't live on those surfaces. It can only live on organic surfaces. And it is dropped to the floor. So, it's a nice hygienic thing to do. Clean things before you put them into your fridge and your cupboard. But in terms of protecting yourself from COVID, it's not going to make any difference.
See, I don't quite understand that, because handshaking is banned now because you can transmit it from your hand to somebody else's hand. Okay?
Well, of course, because a hand is an organic thing. It's a living organism, isn't it? A hand, it's flesh. So, of course, COVID can live on your flesh, but it can't continue to live on a plastic bag.
Right. OK. So supposing take a supermarket where somebody who stacks shelves, and I'm not being dismissive of shell stackers, they do a great job because somebody has to fill up the supermarkets, and they're taking out the beer bottles one at a time from the box and they're putting them on the shelf. Now, supposing that person has somehow got COVID on their hands because they work in a shop and they've been intermingling with other people. If they transfer that to the bottle and the bottle's on the shelf, then I go and pick the bottle up. Aren't I in danger of having the germ transmitted onto my hand from the bottle?
Well, I think the risk is very small because the bottle, again, glass is not organic, is it?
Yeah,
so
sure.
The virus can't live on the glass.
Yes.
It's more of a respiratory infection, so you're more likely to pick it up by breathing in droplets from that other person's breath.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Touching something that they've touched.
I totally agree. And also, that explanation you've given is the reason why hardly anybody's ever caught it outside. You know, there's been no spikes on beaches when people have gone there during the bank holidays last year. Remarkably few people seem to have caught it at Cheltenham last year, because it seems to just blow away in the wind. And that's why, you know, I'm so for opening pubs, not just pub gardens, because they're so well isolated when you get inside. But that, of course, is another story. Now, you're a good Christian, Ms. Jones, and I say that out of respect. I think you've been to St. Bride's again, haven't you, in the last couple of days for your service?
Yeah, I have, yes, indeed. Yeah. It's gratifying to see that the numbers are going up, that more people are feeling confident about coming back through our doors and to enjoy the choral music and the organist's music and to be part of a community again. That's a very big part of why people attend church services, I think.
No, and I totally agree.
It's very lovely to be back among those friends.
Right. Now, I was, reading one of my journals. I read them all the time. And I was quite surprised to learn there are 200,000 British members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in this country. They, of course, are the Mormons. How does your faith, because I think your Church of England, interact with those other faiths? And, you know, is there anything very different about it all?
I think that, yes, there are a lot of differences. I think the whole point of an allegiance to any denomination is tolerance. And we all have to be aware and to observe and to tolerate other religions as well. Religions are really cultural, aren't they? They are the ways in which we worship. And so cultural rituals and activities are specific to certain religions, not to others. But the point is, it's all about the worship of God, and we have to tolerate each other's. I think that, I mean, the Mormons, as far as I know, believe in the crucifixion, the resurrection, the divinity of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
They also claim that God sent more prophets after Jesus's death.
Right.
Not sure about that, but family life, good deeds, respect for authority, missionary work, all that kind of thing, very important to them. Yeah. And we'd have to say that those are all good things. I think people are very suspicious of Mormons because of the suggestion of polygamy, which is the situation in which a man can take several wives simultaneously. They do seem to have abandoned that practice in the late 1800s. Yeah. And I think they even get involved in prosecuting polygamists now. I think there are a few odd things they do, like blessing their knickers. And they bless their knickers. But, you know, there are garments in the Anglican Church that are sacred to us. So we should be tolerant about that.
Yeah.
I think there is a negative image about them, especially in America. And they tend to think that Mormons aren't Christians, that they are a cult. But then we have to remember the Osmonds, Christian people, they're Mormons. The Latter-day Saints Church had a very big missionary success in South Wales during the 1840s. Huh? And Welsh people were a big part of the great Mormon migration to America.
And South America, founded, actually, Chile.
Yes, and founded the Mormon Church in Utah. So a lot of Welsh people out there, yes. Patagonia is a place where a lot of Welsh people settled.
Yeah, no, I've been there, absolutely right. Right, Ms. Jones, thank you very much. Getting towards the end here, I've found a new device, and it's an iron that you don't iron your clothes on an ironing board. You put your clothes on, and then you point this device, it's a hot air device, towards you, and all the creases drop out. How about that?
You point it towards you. What, you put the clothes on first?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So,
hang on. Is it April the 1st again?
No, honestly. It's called Steamery. It's called the Steamery. It's from Stockholm. It sold 120,000 appliances last year. If you don't want to iron anything, you put it on, you put your clothes on. And what it does is, you don't put your clothes on wet, you put your clothes on dry, but still creased. But then this device called, excuse me, the Freeger F10, comes from Scandinavia, blows sort of damp air at your clothes and irons them instantly on your body.
But wouldn't the steam burn your skin?
No, because you point it at your clothes and it's not that hot.
The clothes are on your skin.
Yeah, but it's not that hot. Honestly.
Well, it has to be hot. If it makes steam, mm-hmm. it has to be boiling.
I don't know about that, but I'm reading a piece by Hannah Betts, who wrote this in one of the publications you and I read. And she said, brandishing the said implement, the sweeping gesture that began on a blouse and proceeded straight up the tender skin inside my left arm, I suddenly found myself with a wound. Horrified by my wounds, gentleman downstairs offered to press things for me. And so began. And she's going on about the fact that, you know, it can be dodgy, but I do remember years ago when I lived in a house with other blokes, there was a guy there who used to put his shirt on and then switch the iron on and then iron the shirt on his body.
I mean, no way. That yeah. reminds me of when I was a teenager. We used to iron our hair.
Right, golly. I've
so
never
we,
done
we
that.
All had long sort of waist-length, bum-length hair, and we used to yeah. sling it over the side of the ironing board and then iron it. And that awful smell of singed hair yeah. if you had the iron yeah. too hot.
Yeah, didn't it burn your hair?
Well, it could do if you Ooh. Had the iron too hot. God. So the idea was to put a towel over it, but then you'd get this sort of crinkly effect. So, you know, it wasn't ideal.
No, it wasn't ideal
but
at all.
I think we have hair straighteners today. I suppose you could use a hair straightener to iron your clothes in an emergency. Just run them up your trousers, but you don't want to get too close to the bits.
No, you certainly don't, Miss Jones. Thank God I've got a... I've got a housekeeper who looks after all that for me. Right.
Yeah, well, don't let her too close to your bits.
Thank you very much, Miss Jones, honestly. You know, let's just end the podcast, shall we, and bring it down to another very basic level. Yes, thank you very much. Right. OK, folks, that's it for today. Thank you very much indeed. Miss Jones, thank you very much indeed. The world now should open up for us all. It's going to be a better life. Pandemic is retreating and, you know, lockdown is easing. So, each time we broadcast. Now, Ms. Jones, I hope the world gets a little bit better. And for all our millions of listeners, stay safe and hope it gets better for you.
And see you down Marks and Spencer's.
So anyway, I go to the door and I've only got a towel and I said, hello. I said,
you answered the door in a towel. That's asking for it. You answered the door in a towel.
No, this is what I said. I wasn't going to answer the door. So I wrapped a towel around me. And I went to the door.
That is asking for it.
No, I looked through the spy hole, you know, and I saw a bloke standing there, you know, and I said, can I help you? And he said, yes, sir, I've got a parcel delivery for you. I said, what, for me? He said, yeah. He said, it's Amazon. I said, oh. I said, well, you know, how big is it? He said, no, it's not that. He's...
Sorry. He's standing there in the town, going, how big is it? Oh, no. My God.
But anyway, he said, I'm sorry, sir, but I can't leave this with you until I've got a picture of you accepting it. I said, no, I'm serious. Yeah.
Oh,
so
no.
So I had to...
Was it April the 1st, by any chance?
No. I had to go rapidly... go and put some clothes on, you know, just a pair of shorts and a shirt. I came back to the door, opened it, handed
it to him. He appears in a chiffon blouse.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And, you know, I had a cigarette in a holder, you know what I mean? Yes,
glass of champagne in the other hand. Yeah.
A glass of champagne.
And a bit of lippy.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I don't know, Miss Jones, honestly. I've got something in my throat this morning, Miss Jones. I don't know what it is. But,
do you want to share that with us?
No, excuse me, Miss Jones, you know.
Don't let her too close to your bits.
Thank you very much, Miss Jones, honestly. You know, let's just end the podcast, shall we, and bring it down to another very basic level. Yes, thank you very much.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.